All right. Good evening, everyone. We find ourselves on Sukkah Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. We are on 31A in Sukkah, and we are about one third down. We made a pretty good dent last time. We're already one third down, but lest you be concerned that we don't have a lot of material to cover, I have some supplemental material. Try to bring this close up. Yes, it is the same safer I brought to our book club this morning, exactly the same volume, and not to do with Heter Iska, but actually to do with the Gemara we're going to be seeing tonight. Just going to mute where the noise is coming from. Okay. And then we have some other interesting things as well. So previously in our Gemara Shir, we learned that someone who steals materials to build a sukkah and actually builds a sukkah with it, he is not required to deconstruct the sukkah. We said gezel eitzim sichven, and used it for schach. Everyone agrees ein lo ela d'mei eitzim, that you only have to pay restitution. You don't have to return the actual wood, and that's because they wanted to make it easier for people to do teshuva, and for people to, because if I say, oh my gosh, I built a whole sukkah out of this, and now I want to do teshuva, and I have to rebuild, building a sukkah is not, I mean, some people enjoy it. I'm the guy who's like, when we get something from IKEA, people are like, oh, it's so much fun with IKEA. You get to build it all on your own. I'm like, I don't enjoy that. Just like, give me a full piece of furniture and let me just be done with it. It's like, I remember, I always bring up this trip that I did on APAC before COVID. So, I think I've shared that with you a few times. So every evening we'd have like these 5-star meals, and there'd be some politician guy who would come speak to us about the situation in Israel, and we'd have like all these gourmet steaks. There was a moment that, oh wait, I lost my train of thought on that. Where was I going with that?
Thank you.
No, but you know what happens? I get too much background to a story, and then I forget what the point was I was going to bring up with it. Oh no! So the point I was going to bring was like, so one evening they didn't give us the free food. They gave us free food, but they gave us the materials. They gave us the ingredients, and they had this like 5-star fancy chef guy, and he's like, "I'm going to show you how to make your own dinner tonight." And I was like, "I'm just going to go get some fast food from somewhere. I don't want to make my own dinner." I'm like, I thought we paid all this money. I didn't have to pay any money, but I thought whoever paid, the LaFells who paid money for the trip, was like, so I don't have to do any work. So some people, like, they enjoy it. It's like, apparently it's like a hip thing that you go on like a program, and there's like this chef guy who wears the fancy hat who teaches you how to make the food, and it's supposed to be a lot of fun. And I'm like, I'm just hungry. Just give me something to eat. So that's my philosophy. So, if I, Moshe Gertz, after went through all the annoyance and building a sukkah with stolen material, and then I was told I had to deconstruct and rebuild my sukkah afterwards, I would think twice about, I'll be like, maybe I'll become a Baal Tshuva in a few days from now after sukkahs. So we don't want people to put that off. So that's why the Chachamim wanted to make it easier for people to do teshuva. So that was the last thing that we said. We pick it up with Hahi Safta. There was a grandma. All right. Anyone here go by Safta? I know we have a Jima. My mom goes by Safta.
I
So,
do.
okay.
I
What?
do.
Oh, okay. Safta Phyllis.
How
So this is
about
not about
that?
Phyllis, though. I need to make that clear because she's not going to come out in the best light over here. So this elderly woman comes before Rav Nachman on Sukkos. Rav Nachman was basically working for the Reish Galusa, the exilarch, who was the leader of the Jewish people at the time. Amrle, she tells him, Reish Galusa, ukul rabbanim debei Reish Galusa, besukkah gezula hava yasveh. The Reish Galusa and all the rabbis who were his buddies, they're sitting in a stolen sukkah. And how do I know that? Because the servants of the Reish Galusa, Rashi explains, came to my property and took my lumber and built a sukkah out of it. So, Savcha lo eshkach bar Rav Nachman. So she was busy yelling, give it back, give it back. And Rav Nachman ignores her. Amrale, she says to him, Isto de habile la bua tlasne tini streavde sotha kamai vlash A woman whose father has 318 servants comes before you with this complaint, and you do not heed her? Amar lu Rav Nachman, we'll explain what that means in a moment. Piyasa, she's a colonist, she's just a loudmouth. We don't have to deconstruct the sukkah. At most, she's entitled to monetary compensation for the materials that were taken. There is a lot to explain about this. This is a really puzzling story. It's such a puzzling story, by the way, that Rav Schirmbach, so when I was in Eretz Yisrael this past summer visiting my parents, I picked up the set of Moed Muzman. It wasn't yet available in America, and I'm a big Rav Schirmbach fan, so I was so excited to get the newest printing of it. It's a beautiful typeset. They really did a great job. And at the end of one of these essays, he says, I'm going to read for you the text, but al zeh, and on this story that we just read in the Gemara, Tanu HaRishayim HaNiskar Le'il, the wicked people living in Europe at the time, they pointed this out, that the Chachmenu from the Bracha Achzarim, to prove that the sages were cruel, that they were callous, that they flippantly dismissed this poor old lady who wanted to get back her property, saying that she was just a colonist, that she was a loudmouth. We see Rav Nachman is aiding and abetting the Reish Galusa and his boys who are performing theft. And they're stealing in order to benefit themselves. And therefore, and the people who did not like traditional Jews, they proved from the story that we just read in the Gemara, Shechachmenu zichron levracha, darshu tamid that the rabbis, anytime they darshan something, anytime they seek to do something, it's just to benefit themselves. So that's pretty damning when you think about it. Now, there's got to be a good answer to this, right? For sure, he's not going to tell us this if he doesn't have an answer. So the answer is going to come up in the Gemara in a moment. So if we get to the next Gemara, you'll see what the answer is. So let's go forward for a moment. In the next Gemara, next section of the Gemara, Amar Rabina, Hai Kishur Dem Talasa Digzula Avdi Rabbanan, to Avdi Rabbanan to Kanta, Mishum Takanas Marish. So a beam, a central beam for holding up the sukkah that is stolen, the Rabbanan made a special enactment that it need not be returned because of Takanas Marish. A special enactment that when you steal not just any wood, but this like the integral beam that holds up the sukkah, it does not need to be returned. Now the Gemara says, Pshita, Maishama Eitzim. Why do we need a separate statute that tells me that you do not need to return a beam when we already have a statute telling us that you do not need to return the wood? You would think, okay, wood, beam, same difference, right? Ma de tamas, what have I thought to distinguish between them? Eitzim shchihi, avahai lo shchicha. Emelo, kamash malan. I would think, if this woman's wood was stolen, she could find lumber elsewhere. Maybe the material used to make a nice sturdy central beam is not something you just pick up from amazing savings. So something like that, for instance, I would think even that you would have to return. Kamash Malan, the Gemara teaches us, nope, you don't need to return that, just monetary restitution. And finally, and this is going to be the help us with our answer, the Hani Mili Bego Shiva. This entire discussion is in middle of the 7 days of Sukkot. But after the 7 days of Sukkot are over and you don't need your Sukkot anymore, if you are on top of things and you're not what do you call it? Not the, well, lackadaisical. Whatever. You're not procrastinating. You're gonna take down your Sukkot the moment the holiday is over. So then the whole reason that I'm not going to do tshuva is because I don't want to build a new sukkah. Well, now I'm taking down my sukkah anyway. So the Chorubatina, nami. Now, if you cemented it in and you're planning on keeping this as a sukkah year round, that's one thing. But in general, we assume that after the 7 days of Sukkot, when you no longer need the sukkah, you're going to take down the sukkah anyway. So if at that point we discover that there was stolen items, that it was made from stolen material, you would actually return the material itself rather than giving just monetary restitution. And that, if I may, and if that is Rav Shcherbak's answer, Rav Shcherbak says that Rav Nachman wanted to make sure that this woman got her original sukkah materials back, that she got her actual lumber back. So he wanted to delay her from submitting a formal claim that otherwise she would only get the money and she wouldn't get the original material back. So that is Rav Shcherbak's answer. But Toby, it looks like you got something to say
I
here.
don't like that answer. I mean, doesn't she need a sukkah? Is
Yeah.
anybody not concerned about whether she's sitting in a sukkah? What if this is the only material she had?
So
She doesn't
admittedly,
count. Is that why they use a woman for the example? Because she doesn't count?
so everything you said was what ran through my mind as well, that, that's very nice, but she needs one for the holiday. And is the answer that she doesn't need one for the holiday? She's on
Well,
chayiv.
maybe she has a family.
Yeah.
Her kids are coming to her for sukkahs, and she needs to be able to have them sitting in a sukkah.
Don't worry, Toby.
It's
We're not going to steal
totally
your sukkah this
unsatisfactory answer here.
year. No. It's one of those things where you say the conscience better. But let me say one thing. I fully agree with you, Toby. Though you have to always ask the question: why would Chazal leave this story in the Gemara? Right? When you have a story, think about like Kamsa bar Kamsa. It's very clear that the lesson of Kamsa bar Kamsa is that the rabbis left that in the Talmud. Because they wanted that to be a lesson. They wanted to teach, right? So the rabbis did not stand up for Bar Kamsa, and as a result, the Beis HaMikdash gets destroyed. It's there to teach us that moral lesson. So why would the rabbis deliberately put into the Gemara a story in which a rabbi was not nice and seemingly that's it, end of story, right? Like, it's one thing if there was a story in here, and then because Rav Nachman was callous. Right, there's that story with, I think it's from Yehuda HaNasi, in which this calf is about to be slaughtered and it runs to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, or Yehuda HaNasi is trying to take shelter, like, it's like, please save me. And then Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says, Zia lakach no tzar to go, for you have been created for the purpose of being slaughtered and consumed by human beings. And even though he was right, but because he was callous, he was punished for it. So again, the Gemara will teach us sometimes deficiencies, even in our sages, to teach a moral lesson, but here, what's the moral lesson then? So, like, why would they put in a story like this that just opens up the floodgates? So, I mean, you would have to think there's
Tony.
some lesson to be learned from it. But I agree with you. It does feel a little bit forced. I do agree with you, Toby.
So, but what's the lesson? There is no lesson here. It's
Well,
just
the
totally
lesson
like
would
li
be.
legalistic. We can get away with it, on a legalistic point of view.
Well, no, the lesson, according to Sherman, you could take it or leave it, is that the next section of the Gemara is deliberately juxtaposed. I'll give you another example of this. Remember, we learned Maseches Megillah way back when? So there is the Gemara, it says that you're supposed to drink ad lo yada, right? It sounds like you're supposed to get absolutely drunk. But then the next passage in the Gemara is a story about Rav and Rabbi Zeira about him getting up and killing him because he got too drunk. And some of the Mefarshim understand that's no coincidence. That passage was to inform us not to accept the Pesach of Ad Lo Yada. So it could very well be that the reason that the next passage in the Gemara is the qualification of telling us that you get the materials back after 7 days was because that's what Rav Nachman's concern was. All right, take it or leave it.
Yeah, I'm leaving
All
it.
right, Perushat Tovi Al HaShas. Now let's get to the Perushat Pol Al HaShas.
It's not a paper, it's a question. Can we read this to mean that it wasn't necessarily the old woman's sukkah wood? It doesn't say wood from her sukkah, it says they stole her wood.
Oh, you're
At
right.
least
If you
that's
look at
my
Rashi,
translation.
Pol is correct. If you look at Rashi, it says, "Degazlu mimena avdi reish galusa etzim." They stole wood, usichu behen, and they decided to use that wood to make the schach. So Pol brings up a very good point here. I think that's a very compelling reading. That It's not that they went and they deconstructed her stucco and then built their own. It's that she had a lot of lumber in her yard. For all we know, maybe she didn't make her stucco. She didn't, she used something else for her stock, or she already had enough stock. But in principle, no one likes to be stolen from. So I think that's a very good point. Toby, what do you make of Paul's point?
By the way, it wasn't meant as a defense. I'm just trying to read
Yeah, no.
carefully.
I think right, and I think it's a fair reading, and I think that softens the blow over here. It's not like
But
they're throwing her out on the street.
in the context of softening the blow, does the fact that she's an old woman make a difference?
Why did the governor have to tell us that she's elderly? It makes us even more sympathetic.
But is there less of a here for a woman who's elderly to sit outside in the cold?
Well, a woman fundamentally has no chiyuv, even if she's a young woman. So you
I
can't be
mean, we've
less.
already established from the previous Gemara that you can steal an entire sukkah and get away with it.
Well, we got to clarify that a little bit. Right, so in the previous Gemara, well, get away with you in theory still have to pay the person back for it.
Yeah, but you could, but it could be that was an example of it for sure was a sukkah. That it was the person's sukkah and it was stolen and they didn't get their sukkah back. So we already had that. This is like a variation on the theme.
Right, you're saying it sounds like we would assume it's a sukkah because that was the previous case in the Gemara.
Yeah. But either way, I mean,
Look at this. In future Shiurim, like 100 years from now, there's going to be like, in the Art Scroll footnotes, there'll be the Paul and like Toby Machlokas on the dock. And we got to canonize that. One other just interesting thing that maybe that we didn't pay a lot of attention to is that there's this really odd claim she makes that, my father has 318 servants. Does that sound familiar at all?
no, but I've read the footnote here in the
Right. What? So, what
Art
does the
Scroll.
footnote based on Rashi tell you?
That it's not her father they're talking about, it's Abraham.
Abraham, right? So
And he had
Abraham.
and to me, that's also total apologetics. And
Well,
that's nonsense.
not
Where did that
apologetics.
come from?
It's more like, what does that even mean?
Right. Well, look, if her father had 318 servants, if it was her father, then she wouldn't be poor. Maybe, and then maybe that factored into like,
I mean, look, 318 is a weird word, is a weird number. Like, there's clearly something here. And so I'll tell you. So there's a few different Perushim. The Ra just says that, yeah, her father was rich. But based on Rashi, the Chasam Sofer explains that Avraham Avinu yotzim avodav lahatzil miyad oshkav. What was the mitzvah of Avraham Avinu? The Avraham Avinu would look after the disenfranchised. When Lot was taken captive, he went with his 318 men to save Lot. So he would stand up for the disenfranchised. And her mussar was that, why are you not acting like him? Likewise, the Aruch HaNer suggests that Avraham Avinu would make sure that even his servants would not steal from other people's fields. When they went out to graze, remember he had that whole parting ways with Lot because Lot did not really care what his servants were doing. Avram did care about that. So maybe the Reish Galusa should be careful, just like Lot, sorry, just like Avraham Avinu, to ensure that his servants are not stealing. Which, by the way, I think that's a great shot. There, that's a really solid analogy over there because I could find other people in Tanakh who care for the disenfranchised. But I think that's like a really great, that's a really great, chab over here that he figures out that Avram made sure that his servants would not steal. So why are you not doing the same and living up to those standards? I mean, I don't need to put a haskama on like Chasam Sofer versus Aruch HaNer, but that one resonated with me in particular. I see a lot of commonality, and I can see why specifically Avraham Avinu was the choice and why she mentioned the servants in particular.
She's right.
Ah, Toby's
Right.
on the yeah, Toby's on the side of the maskilim. All right, yeah. So all right, it's a difficult passage. Anyway. Back to our featured presentation, my friends. We are up to, okay, well, we're done talking about stolen sukkahs for now. And we're going to get back to another part of the Mishnah, which we talked about When your arbaminem become dried out, that they become pustule. And we're going to talk about maybe there's a difference between an esrog versus a lulav. So here we go. Tana. So here's a brisa. Yavesh pustule, Rehuda machshir. Dry is pustule, and Rehuda says dry is kosher. Amar Rava, well, dried what? So Rava says machlokis belulav. They're in debate about whether dryness is a disqualification is regarding a lulav. Drabbanan sabri esrog, that the laws of lulav mirror the laws of esrog. Ma esrog vai hadar, af lulav vai hadar. The same way that an esrog needs to be hadar, needs to be beautiful, so too a lulav also needs those qualities. Whereas Rehuda savar lo makshin lulav esrog, we do not create an there's no a lulav is not held to the same standard as an esrog. An esrog is called a pre-8 hadar. So it's like you don't necessarily have to be a fan of Ben Shapiro, but it's in Yana Dioma. There's this iconic video in which you know what they do, the pundits, they come to the colleges and they do Q&A with them. So anyway, there's this video that's gone around for many years in which this girl says, well, why did a Boy Scouts, why don't they have girls in it? Apparently, nowadays, there's just, if you're watching the news, there was some recent change. So he says, it's in the name, Boy Scouts. And everyone's like, oh. So pre-8 Hadar, it's in the name. So that's, I'm not saying Rehuda and Ben Shapiro are in any way analogous. Rehuda Summer, lo makshin lulav la'esrog. Abel be'esrog, kol hadar be'inan. But when it comes to an esrog, again, it says creates hadar, everyone agrees that it needs to be hadar. And therefore, if it's dried out, you've got yourself a disqualified esrog.
Rabbi,
Yes, Phyllis.
but everybody knows that the Hadassah and the Arava and the Lulav too dry out
Yeah,
during
we possibly love.
Sukkot. During Sukkot, they may be
Yeah,
nice
yeah.
when you first get them.
What was that?
They may be nice when you first get them, but they will dry out.
Yeah, and the
Not if you put them
aravos
in water every
themselves.
night.
What was that?
I try water and it dries out anyway. It's never like it is in the beginning.
We put
Yeah,
them
the
in water.
aravos actually could very well become dry enough to the point of becoming pusle. The aravos really run the risk of that. Your lulav, it's kosher at the beginning. It's not going to all of a sudden dry out over 7 days and become pusle. The hadassim even will likely last long enough. The aravos, if you're not taking care of them, you really do need a second pair in the refrigerator. Okay, moving on, continuing our discussion. Ubalulav lo by Rehuda Hadar. Is it true that Rabbi Huda does not require Hadar for a lulav? That's not Rabbi Huda Omer Yagden Mamala. You're supposed to bind them together. So, well, why would Rabbi Huda tell us to go out of our way to bind a lulav? My time, la mishum to buy Hadar. Isn't that because binding it up is an aspect of beautifying it? So he does hold that a lulav needs to be beautiful. Not like needs, it's a necessity. Nah, that's not the reason why. Lo, k'diktani taima, Rabbi Huda Omer. What's the reason? Amishurai tarfon. Why does Rabbi Huda say you have to bind a lulav? It's a technicality. It's gzeiras hakasuv. Kapos tamar. It's called kapos tamar. Kapos, the mayapari chaftenu. But the lashon of kapos is of binding them together. So that's it's just basically how he reads the pasuk. Now we turn around and say, wait. The lo by Hadar, is this true that we do not need Hadar still? But none. Ain Odin es ha'lulav ela b'mino divrei Yehuda. Okay, maybe the binding itself is not indicative of requiring Hadar, but the fact that Rabbi Yehuda requires you to bind the lulav with its own leaves, meaning like, the things that they use to, what do they call the kushka, bring in the Yiddish for it, forgive me, the rings that you put around the lulav to bind it together. That's made from dried lulav leaves from another lulav. So, such a lulav, it's kind of cannibalistic almost when you think about it. Don't think too much about it. But it has to be from the actual lulav. So, if you're Rabbi Huda, so my time, Lamishim to buy Hadar, isn't that an aspect of it being unified and thereby beautiful? Lo damarava afilu b'sivu afilu b'ikra d'dikla. Siv, Rashi says, Siv is hagadol svivos hadekel. These are things that grow around the dekel tree, the palm tree. B'nechrach svivav k'in lulav gefanu, and they soften around and around it like lulav gefanu, like vines or something. It's what's the art scroll official rendering of Steve? And I guess Ikra Didikla while you're at it, which is like, well, how do they render it into English?
I'm sorry, Rabbi, which Ikra did
How they, two words before that, Steve, and how do they render Ikra Didikla? I mean, Rashi tells us, but I'm curious what their
so
one
the
word
first
is.
one is ivy.
Ivy, okay. That makes sense, because
That
he
is
says
a strip
like
of bark
vines.
from the trunk of the palm tree.
Okay, yeah. So, okay, that makes sense. So these things, which are not typically used for the lulav, but they're considered part of it. So Rava says, you can even use these things. So these things are not considered beautiful. They're not aesthetically. They're not aesthetically pleasing. So why does Rabbi Yehuda mandate it nonetheless? My time up, Rabbi Yehuda. It's very simple. You're only supposed to, I'm just gonna mute really quick. Sorry. All right. Rabbi Huda says that you need, well, not Rabbi Huda. The mitzvah is the arba minim, right? Not the chamesha minim. So if you start binding it with something else, you don't have four species, you have five species. So nothing to do with aesthetics, nothing to do with the beauty of the lulav. Very simple, technical, straightforward point. Now, coming to our final section for this evening, now we're going to push in the opposite direction. Before we're saying is, does Rabbi Huda not hold that a lulav needs to be hadar? Now we're going to push the opposite direction and say maybe even an esrog doesn't need to be hadar according to Rabbi Yehuda. So esrog nibay Rabbi Yehuda hadar. Bahatanya arbas minin shabalulav, the four species of the lulav, kishem shein pochstin mehen, hachim osifan aleihen. So the same way you can't have three, you can't have five. Lo matzah esrog, if you don't find an esrog, lo yavi, lo parsh, lo rimo. And I think parsh is like quince or something. Is that the
Hint,
parsh?
yeah. Quint,
Yeah.
hint,
See, I don't even know what a quince is. I just remember that's how it's translated.
it's a fruit that they used to make it, like they used to use the design of it in a lot of
Yeah.
17th and 18th century tapestries.
I'm going to do a quick Google on this. Quince. Fruit. No. Quince fruit. Here we are. There you go. For those who, you would think it almost looks like an esrog, but it's not. So now we know what a quince is. Okay. And not, nor a pomegranate. Lo davar acher, nothing else. And kamusha kisharin, if it begins to deplete in liquid, see, this is like a choose your own adventure, right? You have to like look at Rashi, and then Rashi, there's like a footnote there to not go to Siyunim, and it goes to tells you, if du es lechosam, it's beginning to lose its moisture. It's still kosher, right? That's going to happen to your hadath, and they begin to lose moisture, but they don't become pusil just because they lost some moisture. But yevashim, but if they're dry, like the aravos get so dry that they begin to crack and brittle in your hands, then they are psulin. That's when they're disqualified. And Rabbi Huda Omer, af yevashim kasher, even if they dry out, they're kosher. Vam Rabbi Huda, and Rabbi Huda's proof is, that there's a story about cities in which they didn't have a lot of lulavs around, and each generation would basically bequeath their lulav to the next generation. It became a family heirloom. Amarlo, the sages responded, Yisham Raya, is that a good proof? In Shasat Chak Raya. This is a very important principle. We'll get back to in just a moment. That Ishas Had Chak, you can't learn from extenuating circumstances. We'll get to that. We'll get back to that in just a moment. I just want to finish the Gemara. Ketani Nihas, Rabbi Huda Omer, Af Yevashim Kasherin. So what we get from here in the end of the day is that even though the sages had a retort, we see that Rabbi Huda holds that if it's dried out, it's still kosher. So my lava esrog, Does that mean Rabbi Huda would go so far as to say maybe even a dried out esrog is still going to be kosher? Which is against our assumption that even he would concede that an esrog needs to be hadar and needs to be moist still. So the Gemara says, which you would think was shot beforehand because they were only talking about lulavim, lo alulav. This entire discussion is just regarding lulavim. We cannot extrapolate to esrogim. So we basically, in conclusion, our maskana is Rabbi Yehuda, both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim agree that an esrog cannot be dried out. It's pre-Eitz Hadar. But when it comes to the lulav, the Chachamim say it cannot be dried out. And Rabbi Yehuda says it is okay still. And we paskin by the Chachamim. Now, one final point over here. This is like a double underline. This is like a super important principle. In which the Chachamim say, "Ein shas hadchak raya," that's not a good proof if we're talking about a shas hadchak. Now, let me ask you the following question: what do they mean that this is not a good proof because of the shas hadchak? So, there's two main ways of understanding this Gemara. One way to read it, which is the Ravid understands, is that, well, actually, the Rush understands. The Rosh says, yeah, they were yotze in these extenuating circumstances. But in regular circumstances, one should not rely on using a dried out lulav, which means fundamentally, it's not ma'akid. It's not essential. You are yotze with a dried out lulav, bidyevet. And we say, another important principle, shatz chak, kidyevet dami, that extenuating circumstances are like post facto circumstances. Now, the Ravid argues, and the Ravid says, no. What do we mean, shas v'chak, over here? What do we mean that they would give their lulav, they would bequeath it from one generation to the other? It means the reason that this is not a good paradigm, that is not the proof that Rabbi Huda is making it out to be, is because they were not yotzei with a dried out lulav. They were not yotze with such a lulav. So how can you extract? Why? So why did they do it, right? Why would they still do it? So they would still do it because it was b'toras zecher lemitzvah. It was, it's like the lama nigara. They wanted to have some semblance, some remembrance of the mitzvah of lulav. They shall tishtacheach mehem mitzvahs lulav. So that way, when they're doing chinuch for their kids, one day when they'd be able to get lulav shipments back to their community, and it could be even in many generations from now, they'll still have this general sense of what a lulav is, and that there's this mitzvah of the Arba Mina. So that's the argument of the Ravid, that even bidyevet, and the reason is not a good proof because they weren't yotzei in such a scenario, unlike the Rush. And the Ravid, one could argue, might be the more compelling reading. However, the Or Sameach points out that what is the sheet of the Rush? I don't understand the Rush. The Rush is saying that they were yotze with a dried out lulav, but if you took a dried out lulav where moist ones are available, you would not be yotze. Like, it doesn't work like that. Either it's kosher or it's not kosher. It's pasul. So how can it be that way? So the Or Sameach says that the Rush's shita, right? Because why is a dried out lulav not kosher according to this understanding? It's that it's not a deficiency in the shear of the lulav. You still have your four tefachim, your one tefachim, three tefachim. It's still a kosher. It's still you have a shear. You have the dimensions you need for a lulav. It's just a deficiency in the hiddur of the lulav. But hiddur is relative. So in a region where you cannot acquire nice, moist, fresh lulavim, the lulavim that were available to them are all dry. So relative to that region, that is called hadar. That is called aesthetically pleasing by their very low bar, by their very low standards. But you know what this means?
But then does that apply to Esrog also?
That is a great question. Right. So that is a great point. Great question, Toby. I'm not sure offhand. Maybe because it says Hadar there in the Torah itself, maybe there's some higher standard. But according to the Rabbanan, that Lulav and Esrog would share the same parameters, it would stand to reason that it would be the same for an S rogue as well. And then finally, what this means is that if the Orsa Mayax argument is true, that this is just because Hadar is relative, well, Hadar is not the only factor we need to think about in a Lulav. If the Lulav was not tall enough, if it was too short, or it was a stolen Lulav, let's say, even in a Shas Hadchak where it's the only Lulav available, you would not be Yotzei the Mitzvah. Because the whole argument is not that all the rules go in a Shas Hadchak. It's that in a Shas Hadchak where there is no other Lulav available, that's called beautiful by the relative standard. But theft is not relative. Math and measurements are not relative. That's objective reality. And so if it's a stolen lulav or it's a sh overly short or very short lulav, you would not be Yotzei the mitzvah, even in a case of Shas Hadchak, even when it's the only lulav around. And then the only reason to take it, maybe, just maybe, would be the argument that the Raidin makes that Shelo tishtachach mehem mitzvahs lulav in order to keep the memory of the lulav alive. So that's where we are tonight. We will end over there on the top of Lamed Aleph Amed Beis, and Emir's Hashem will pick it up next week. I am actually going to give the 10:30 shiur in the end of Shabbos. Rabbi Rosenfeld's not feeling well, so I'll be giving the shiur. It's going to be on the topic of music. Is music mutter during Sfira? And then there's supposed to be a strike through over there. Is music mutter ever?
Oh, I'd
So
love to hear
that's our topic.
that. I'd love to hear that.
All right, well, maybe we'll find another opportunity to do it. And if not,
Thank you.
I'm going to write it up as an article format at some point.
Oh,
So
great.
it'll be
Thank
available,
you.
God willing.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
Absolutely. Refuah Shalema, Refuah Shalema. All
Thank
right.
you, and
Good
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbos, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.